Welcome to episode 47 of the Neo Movement Podcast. Today I'm going to speak with Kathy Hackle, who is a leading authority on emerging tech and the metaverse. She's going to share with us some deep insights and tips that she's learned from her tech experience. And she also writes a column for Forbes called The Metaverse Weekly and just published a book called The Augmented Workforce. And we've been talking about it a lot lately. The metaverse is a huge transformative trend, and it matches the breadth of the mass adoption of the internet in the late 90s and social media a decade ago. And some of the components of the metaverse are Web 3.0, the selling of digital goods, how digital goods can be sold and have value just like physical goods can, gaming and virtual worlds, NFTs, and cryptocurrency. Check out our last episode, number 45. If these terms all sound foreign, did an episode called Metaverse 101, and that serves as a good intro to some of this, because I know all these terms are confusing and it's all different emerging tech that we're not as familiar with. But it all comes together as puzzle pieces in this ecosystem that comprises the metaverse. In the past month, I've been trying to learn more about this too, been diving into the tech firsthand, because the best way to learn is to try things out for yourself. Looking into NBA Top Shot, NFTs, seeing e-commerce stores that are selling merchandise for digital goods, and man, it's fascinating. It's funny because there's so much going on right now and it's only going to get bigger. But it seems like only 10% of the population really knows about it. But I think the coolest part about the metaverse and all this stuff that's coming out is, I mean, I went through the dot-com boom in the late 90s and 2000s, and there, people talked about all this opportunity, but the reality was that the only way to really financially benefit from it was to IPO, get stock options, and to IPO on the stock market. And there were a lot of losses for some of the few great stories that we heard about there. It seems like the metaverse is more democratic, that you don't have to be a CEO or a venture capitalist to really benefit from it. I mean, there's so much cool technology involved, but also there's this ethos there where the rewards are spread out more evenly to everyone who's involved in it, not just the top people or the top positions. And in the midst of all of this, was so glad to find Kathy, who is an expert on this, because I know you all, and myself included, we have so many questions that we want to get answered on this. Like, what the heck is the metaverse? What does it even mean? And how can we prepare as individuals and businesses for this and benefit? And what are some fun trends to watch that we can just get into naturally? So Kathy's got some great answers for us all today. Can't wait to dive in. I'm your host, Stephen Carl, talking to you straight from Brooklyn, New York. Now let's get on with the show. Really happy to have our next guest, Kathy Hackle. To briefly introduce Kathy, she is a leading tech futurist. She writes a regular column in Forbes magazine and recently was placed on the list of the top 10 most influential women in tech. Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
And this is a show where we're going to talk about the metaverse. So only fitting that we go warp speed. Let's get right into it. What is the metaverse? Like, what genre of digital goods would fall into that?
It's everything. I think let's take it a little step back, defining the metaverse. I actually wrote a column for Forbes on defining the metaverse. I spoke to 20 professionals. I wholeheartedly believe that not one person or one company should define the metaverse. I think we're all building it. The term really goes back to sci-fi, to Neal Stephenson, who I had the pleasure of working with at Magic Leap. He was our chief futurist there when I was there. And I believe he coined the term in Snow Crash. So that's the first time people were talking about a metaverse or shared virtual spaces. Then also people think metaverse, they immediately go Ready Player One, right? They think the Oasis. And I think it's great because, I mean, it's a really interesting representation of a metaverse. But I always wonder why people always think Ready Player One and they don't think Pokemon Go, right? Why do they tend to go over here? And I really think the metaverse is this convergence of physical and digital. I like what Kevin Kelly says, is it's when the world becomes machine readable, clickable, searchable, likable. It's really where we're heading in this kind of Web 3.0 that we're heading into. I mean, it's not a term that's easy to define. I think we're still creating the words to describe it.
I am discovering that a lot of people have not seen Ready Player One, the movie by Steven Spielberg, because I think it's an excellent, just entertaining intro to the core ideas.
Can I tell you something interesting about that
Absolutely.
Movie? That's based on Ernie Cline's book, Ready Player One and Ready Player Two, which came out last year. Well, not the movie. The movie's only based on Ready Player One, the first book. But I would say the funny thing I wanted to mention is I was actually working for HTC Vive, the creators of the Vive VR headset. I was working for them as a VR evangelist in the southeast of the U.S. during the partnership with Ready Player One. They were the VR partner for Steven Spielberg's Ready Player One. There were screenings, there were events. So yeah, I mean, I kind of have a deep relationship with the metaverse in some way.
Yeah, it's a good intro. It's just so overwhelming for people. And, you know, we've been through these transformational technologies and they're just freaking scary. And it's a lot of times it causes this like, I've seen this with NFTs also, and people are like, oh, NFTs suck, they're a bubble. So what's the easiest way to introduce people to it without just freaking them out on the metaverse?
The easiest way to explain it is trying to frame it in a way that people understand. So Web 1.0, connected information, right? So you were able to have the internet and you were able to find information. Web 2.0, connected people. So you got social media and everything that came with it, good and bad, right? Web 3.0 connects people, places, and things. So it becomes a lot broader and bigger. And that's really where we're heading. That's really where the conversation's heading. It's Web 3.0. So I think it's easier for people to wrap their heads around that and think, oh, okay, you know, Web 1.0, Web 2.0, Web 3.0. We're going into the spatial internet of sorts.
Awesome. You're the perfect person to ask this question. With internet, with all this stuff, there is, like, the first time I heard about virtual reality was like mid-90s. I watched the movie Lawnmower Man. And I thought, VR is coming. These virtual worlds are coming, and now we're 26 years later. And even the same thing with, I was working in like the DVD industry, you know, in 2000, and people were saying, oh, streaming movies, they're coming soon. Like, they're going to be obsolete. It took about 10 or 11 years. So for this metaverse, what is the timing? Like, how far away is this? Or what's now? I don't know. Is there stages that we can prepare for as individuals?
It's being built. It's not something that's tomorrow. And you also have to figure out, are we talking about the metaverse? When people ask to define it, is it the metaverse? Is it metaverses? I tend to look at it as almost in a very easy way. I tend to look at it as the greater metaverse. So like the metaverse, you know how you have the greater New York area or the greater tri-state, but then you have different parts. So kind of I view it like a little bit like the greater metaverse, but there are going to be these metaverses, right? Or kind of, I don't know what to call them within the metaverse. It's being built. And I'll talk about the VR hype. You know, it's definitely been hyped. It's been a cycle. So yeah, I mean, I do think that the difference now with some of those things is that you have actual sales over, you know, I don't know how many millions of dollars of VR games. You have devices. We haven't hit 1 billion VR devices, right? But it's heading. It's going that way. So yeah, I mean, it's all kind of looks like it's heading that way. What I will say with the idea of the metaverse, that will take a while because we're going to need to have infrastructure, right? If you can think about this, if you're going to be, let's say you're accessing the metaverse via a VR device because you're in a wholly virtual world or through wearables, glasses, for example, and you're going to be seeing digital content in front of you, think about it, millions and billions of people using these devices on their head. That is a lot of computing power and connectivity. That is 6G. That's not even 5G. Edge, you're going to need cloud. You're going to need so many different things to be able to have so many entities going live in one instance and doing the same shared experiences. So that's being worked on, but it's not, that part is not here yet, right? Usually when you go into social VR experience or when you do certain things, there's only a certain number of people that can play in an instance, etc. So it is going to take a lot of infrastructure that's being built. So yeah, I mean, I would say the next decade is going to be quite interesting as we look at where we're going. And another thing that people forget as well is Mark Zuckerberg and Evan Spiegel from Snap, who just announced their AR glasses. They mentioned this. I mean, you're putting a computer on someone's face. That is a really hard problem to solve. From the battery life to the weight of the glasses to the optics. I mean, having worked at Magic Leap, I can tell you, it's like, it's really hard technology to solve. It's quite an endeavor. And I think that people miss that sometimes. They don't really realize how hard it is.
Yeah, I think with it, it's just like the internet where in 1990, the mid-90s was when it really came about. And we're still using it today. And like, it becomes more and more a part of our lives as more and more things are built on top of it. There's Safari, there's Chrome, there's different versions. There's not one metaverse, one internet. So I wanted to move on to ask you about the future of work. I read a couple pieces that you've written about with virtual assistants and robots with spatial reasoning. So how do you think work is going to change in the next few years.
Well, what I will say, and I've got a, this is a preview copy, so it has this big line, but like this is a copy of my book that's coming out. It's called The Augmented Workforce, How AR, AI, and 5G Will Impact Every Dollar You Make. And that's exactly what we explore in the book. Instead of thinking of technology as something that replaces the worker, and we know there is going to be job replacement, there is going to be automation. We're not naive about that. Instead of just coming at it that way, we really try to look at technology as something that augments the workforce. It augments how we do our jobs. It augments who we work with, whether they're humans or cobots, you know, co-worker robots, how we get trained, how we get recruited, what industries do what they do. So it's a very big, broad view of the future of work. And trying to understand technologies like 5G, IoT, AR, VR, AI, even blockchain, even how that impacts the future of work and the future of the workforce.
I've used the analogy of like an Iron Man suit where it's like a normal human would be this, but you could be a superhero with the right tools and be able to get rid of a lot of work with it.
Yeah, and it's work related, but it's also fun and there's other things. I wrote an article for Forbes called Augmented Human, 5 times I've used technology to augment myself. And then I talk about experience I had where I had surgery and I had some complications and they actually had to put this machine. They had to put this machine inside me and I had to live with the machine for a couple months. I literally had to plug myself into the wall. And I remember my son being like, Mommy, are you a cyborg? And I said, no, honey, I feel more like a Tesla. You know, it's like cyborg sounds way too cool. I really had to be looking at where can I plug myself in to my machine. Yeah, I mean, there's many different ways to look at technology and how it augments our work and many other things.
Like, so with virtual assistant, because we're starting to see that now where there's more people recognize like, oh, I can have a VA and do to handle the response like these instead of me doing everything, especially entrepreneurs, executives, so much work and so busy. So how do like VAs fit into that future vision?
Yeah. Well, by the way, I do love my assistant. She is a lifesaver. She is the best gatekeeper I have. I think you might have dealt with her. She was great.
Yeah, I've only known her for 10 days and Lexis is very strong.
But she's human. She's great.
And there's a human side. Human exactly. Side. It's not just the robots.
Yeah, I mean, I think there'll be space for both, right? I'm still going to need a human touch. I'm still going to need someone. If there's something, for example, I had to cancel something earlier today because I had to run and do something with my children and just message her and I say, can you do this, right? A robot might not get the context or get the nuance of what I need to be communicated. So yeah, I think when we start to talk about virtual assistants and we start to talk about that, we start to talk about embodiment of technology. And I think that that's where, for example, the learnings I had from working at Magic Leap is we were looking at human-centered artificial intelligence. So we had a virtual human called Micah, very non-threatening, great experience. Everyone that engaged with her would put the device on, they would engage with her. She didn't speak at that moment, but if she laughed, she smiled, people smiled back. If people yawned, there's even the yawn at the same time. So it's this different way of approaching technology and engaging with it in a much more human way, right? Rather than thinking of robots as only this Terminator type of looking things. So I think that it's interesting. And I see it with my children and how they engage with virtual assistants, right? To me, they're a gadget. Like, I'll get mad if they don't give me the answer. And my kids will be like, Mom, be nice to Alexa or whoever. I don't want to wake her up. But you know, be nice to this virtual assistant. To them, it's a friend. It's someone that helps them sometimes with homework. It's more than a gadget. And I think that's what's interesting to me in the perspective of this idea of embodiment, right? And these virtual assistants. I even talk about in one of my articles about the concept of business to robot to consumer. And what I mean by this is that as we speak to our virtual assistants a lot more and they start to get to know us more, eventually, in some way for brands, there will be a gatekeeper, right? If the virtual assistant knows that I'm running out of popcorn before I even know it, and they're going to reorder it, how does the brand get to the consumer, right? So there's going to be something really interesting changes there in the way marketers to consumers.
Right, like the early gatekeeper. I'm seeing that too sometimes with chat, where just in the early stage of chat, like the robot comes in and then you talk to the real person afterwards. So let's move to digital avatars. You had written, there's some cool shit coming down with like hearing about Justin Bieber and Shawn Mendes putting their likeness into digital avatars. Gucci, past Gucci has always been that flex of status. Now I hear they're getting into digital wear for virtual worlds. So how do digital avatars fit into this metaverse?
Yeah, so I posed the question, I said, is direct to avatar the next direct to consumer? Right? It's a very broad question. It's a very valid question. So I really look at what the direct-to-avatar economy is, right? So I'm spending, for my kids, who are all under 10, most of their allowance money or most of the money that they get from special occasion is spent digitally. They will ask me for Robux, you know, because they play Roblox. If parents are listening and they have some older kids, they're probably playing Fortnite and they're spending V-Bucks. So they're already spending digital currency on these virtual goods, right? I would have my son say, Mom, can you buy me this for my avatar? Because I'm going to go to so-and-so's Roblox birthday party, right? They care about how they look in these virtual worlds. They care about how their homes look in a game like Adopt Me. Yeah, I mean, there's a statistic, I think it's from ARK Invest, from Kathy Wood's ARK Invest, that says that by 2025, the virtual goods economy is going to be worth, I think, $390 billion. And that number, even goods could be anything from a sword in Minecraft to a skin in Burberry. Burberry skin in League of Legends, right? So this number was actually, I think, shared before the NFT craziness that we're going through. I might be a little conservative at this point. But yeah, I mean, the virtual goods economy is real. The direct-to-avatar economy is real. You mentioned Shawn Mendes, Genies, my friends at Genies, Akash and the team over at Genies are the ones doing all that great work with 3D avatars. Gucci's doing always at the forefront. They just did the Gucci Gardens in Roblox, which was a really fun experience. Beautiful, really well done. Took the platform visually to a different level. I was actually interviewed by Vogue Business for that story. I'm good friends with the folks at Roblox, and they're doing great work with a lot of amazing brands. Entering virtual goods is everything from thinking through how do you sell to avatars, but also eventually think about NFTs and is it non-fungible tokens. And I think we definitely talk about ownership when it comes to non-fungible tokens.
Yeah, so it's such a huge opportunity for businesses. And I think about just for a retail company, how they prepare for this. Like, what's their org chart? Because at this point in time, like, the expertise is not there. People that are well-versed, just like building a website, there are certain people with certain skill sets and like metaverse-related stuff, not as defined. So how do companies prepare for it? And like, would they just outsource to an agency, talk to someone like you, create their own internal chief metaverse officer? I don't know. Like, how do they do it? How do they prepare for it?
How do they prepare? I mean, I think it depends on every company. A lot of the people that are having conversations with me are coming to me because they need that. Set the foundation, right? Set the foundation to understand what does this mean, right? And eventually they're going to be able to have their metaverse team internally, right? At some point, people are like, what is this social media thing? They're like, we're never going to need Twitter. We're going to make intern John do our Twitter and set up our Facebook page. Do you remember the days back when interns would set up the Facebook pages?
And then yeah, my neighbor's kid is 18 years old and he's a genius. He could build this website. He can run the social
media. Yeah, but you know, back in the day, the intern would set up the Facebook page and then they would leave and the Facebook page was managed by them. So the brand was like, give me back my Facebook page credentials. So the same thing is happening. It's like people don't know, like, what are they hiring? The current skills in these current roles can't wrap their heads around this metaverse with this convergence, right? So for me, my clients, the people that come to me, I do a lot of work with high-end luxury brands. They come to me and one of them, what we did is I set up the foundation really for their digital goods and NFT strategy. And now they're working on deploying. But yeah, it really depends. I mean, other clients, I have another very high-end luxury brand and they were ready for NFTs. They weren't even asking the question. They were like, can you help us deploy? Where do we go? How do we do this? So it really depends. I mean, I do a lot of educating, a lot of evangelizing. You know, I jokingly say I'm the Guy Kawasaki of AR and VR. I should say I'm the Guy Kawasaki of the metaverse because I do a lot of that evangelizing. And Guy did back then kind of evangelizing for Apple and saying, hey, the iPhone or where it is that he was talking about. The same way with the metaverse and having brands understand, how do you get started? Well, to me, 3D is the gateway drug into AR. You need to start figuring out your 3D strategy, etc. And then how are you selling digital goods? How are you looking at gaming and how are you looking at these virtual worlds, not as a one-off activation, but an actual revenue stream for the future?
Yeah. So they just don't know where to get started because they're like, they're seeing the NFT craze. And they're like, well, what am I going to create an NFT of? And then if you're a luxury brand, how do you create utility through that digital item where you can use it again and again, and it can have that value? Like, I think with the Beeple NFTs and a lot of them, what's interesting is that those people that buy them, you know, I had this experience with CryptoPunks. I saw it recently where if you bought a CryptoPunk, mad expensive right now, but they gave another free art piece called Meebits. And I know that well, because I have a friend who looks just like one of the Meebits. It's hysterical. Like, there's an avatar. Yeah, it's like that utility for brand. How do they figure that out? Like, what am I going to do with it? Am I going to do an NFT? Am I going to do an event? Like, what is...
Yeah, I think every brand is different. I mean, the very high-end luxury brand that I mentioned, I can't mention the names right now, but they have legacy pieces. What they sell is a legacy piece of sorts that gets passed down from one person to another that are viewed in some way as investments. So they're perfect for NFTs, right? So they're thinking through physical object because they have very select, very small collections that sell out that people get on waiting lists for. it was just very smart for them to start to think about how can we do this in an NFT way and sell this special collection via NFT. And also, it's important because you can also bake into there the royalty, right? So in the secondary market, they can still make a percentage of everything that's sold, their piece. You know, right now, if let's say one of those luxury items gets sold on secondary market, they don't see a penny. But now they're going to be able to get access to that. So for a brand, it should be quite interesting.
Yeah, I do think with apparel, it's interesting because even with pricing, everything is priced the same for clothing when you manufacture it. But with NFTs, you put serial numbers. The value is different based on the serial number. So you get that in a way that they don't have. So that's intriguing. So wow, we are running through questions fast. We are just about to wrap things up. Final question is, what's your best piece of alpha, your best piece of like, you know, just advice for people in regards to the metaverse? This is really overwhelming. Like, what's something that you've heard in the past or through your experience that you think could help someone that's trying to understand all this stuff?
I mean, definitely educate yourself, read. I'm going to send you definitely to my things I've written. I'm probably one of the writers out there that has the biggest collection of metaverse articles. There's some great Matthew Ball, for example, has a great essay. He's written great stuff, but no, I think I write about it very frequently. So I do think that I have a bit of an interesting collection. I would say I also started something called Metaverse Weekly for Forbes, kind of a look at the week and what happened metaverse related. So it could be, it's anything from NFTs in fashion to virtual real estate to you name it, VR and AR news. It's a very broad combination, NFTs as well, very broad look at some of the things that are happening in that space for people to just to catch up. So subscribe to and look out for it. If you want to just kind of stay abreast, instead of setting up a Google alert that you might not read, Metaverse Weekly.
I am an avid reader of your column. Yeah, I think there's just a nice, it's interesting that the metaverse, it's not like this place you fly to. It's a confluence.
It's a convergence. It's a convergence. It really is a convergence of all these technologies. So that's the thing. Is it a place or is it a mindset? Or what is it, right? The metaverse is a very broad and interesting term. Like for the Genie CEO, for Akash, like for him, the metaverse is a mindset. We're all looking at it from different perspectives and we're all building it together, which I think is the very interesting part.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on. This was great. And I look, you know, we'll put a link. When is the book coming out?
The book is out May 25th.
Right, excellent. So very soon. Okay. So we will include links to the book and to your column.
Yeah. And then on LinkedIn too. Like if people want to connect with me on LinkedIn, as you know, I share lots of fun content. That's like my favorite social media platform. So yeah, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn as well.
Yes. Yeah. And LinkedIn is how I found you actually too. So it's excellent. Thanks for coming on again. This was great.
Hi, this is Steven. This episode is sponsored by Needle Movement. Needle Movement helps emerging e-commerce brands master their email and SMS strategies. We know all the ins and outs of Klaviyo and then some. And sure, it's about sales, but for me, it's different. I take a very hands-on approach with all my clients. I'm honestly very selective with the clients I pick because we don't have many slots open. And that's because Needle Movement is all about having clients that we can call friends in the end and making e-commerce fun. E-com is fun. You know the story. It's fun when you know you're going to hit all those monthly sales numbers. Recently, we had one client who broke their monthly sales marks for 15 months in a row. Contact us to learn more. You can go to our website or you can reach Needle Movement on LinkedIn and Twitter and we can discuss how you can make the most out of your e-commerce store. And last but not least, tune in for another new episode of the Needle Movement podcast.